This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And we are back after a short hiatus for the summer.
This is the new season.
This is the new. We are here. It is the new
season.
We're
adding a fifth character.
We are jumping. We're jumping the shark in the first episode. No, we have. Yeah,
we're gonna add an adopted child,
and we're gonna have a wedding.
I'm not little and cute enough anymore as the new kid, so they have to have a newer kid, right?
Yeah, you should. Okay, I'm gonna say this right now. Anybody who listens to this. If anyone listens to this who wants to be on the program, let us know. We can put more people on the show, other coaches who would like to
Except
talk to
for
us.
Lexington debaters.
No debaters. We want coaches.
This All right. is Jennifer Baruti and Thomas Baruti are listening to this at home, so we'll allow a Baruti family call in if they want to. Okay. I'm thinking about all the viewers I know we have, or listeners I know that we have.
Yeah, well, that's two.
There you go.
Okay, well. And we're there, and that is that. We were just talking before we started, first trying to figure out what we were going to talk about. We were talking about Yale a little bit, which for us, I guess, actually, Green Hill is the first
Vassar
tournament you
Vassar.
Guys are going
Vassar,
to.
Robin, Green Hill.
Vassar doesn't count. That's, you know.
Thanks.
Yeah, Cruz runs it, so it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, how good could it be? But it's small. I mean, in terms of, though, having a big tournament sure. with a lot of people going, Green Hill will be the, I assume, most people's starter.
Yep. For I'll the be there year. This year for the first time.
Cool. Mm, I've
oh.
never been.
Yep.
I gather it's a great run tournament from everything
yep.
I've heard about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be there for approximately 12 days, it seems. So, going to the round robin as well. So, let's hope.
Well, that's right. You have Noah this year. You have a star yeah. to shepherd
yeah.
around. Oh, that's good.
To lug around, yes.
So I used to have a star, and I just had John lug him around, lug her that's around, right there, and it was just worked perfectly sure. fine. Worked perfectly well. And yeah, we
the
do
Green
have
Hill's, Green Hill's
yeah.
good. They do this thing where they. They do five rounds in the first day, but they're able to single flight that last one, which somehow makes it seem like it runs a lot better that way.
Well, it also ends kind of still early-ish in the evening, even though it's five rounds, so it's not.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel brutal, right? Like, I mean, I always felt like relaxed and well rested. I mean, you know, as relaxed as one could be in a debate tournament, but I felt like well rested for the second day.
Yeah, I mean, if you get out for dinner. At a reasonable time. That's a good thing. That really can make one of these long tournaments having a, you know, just getting out for dinner because then you feel relaxed, you get to bed, blah, blah, blah.
That's what I tried to do for the Saturday night of my own tournament.
I like that. You know this. I was looking today. I'll look in my office, by the way, to check the links. That's where I was having the trouble. But anyhow, I was looking today at the schedule for Big Bronx. It looks like a nice schedule. I'll be able to sleep in my own bed on Saturday night. But we get what the awards are. The speaker awards are 7:30, something like that. But it looked very. It was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, it. As we get better doing the MJP, you know.
Sure. 7:15 is the presentation of the awards. But anyway.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll keep that in mind for the Bronx funnies.
If our listeners haven't been subscribing to these Bazooka Joe like comments, I strongly recommend. They're about as funny as Bazooka Joe.
That Bazooka Joe is my inspiration.
They're
I must say.
Funny.
I was going to be much more elaborate in the beginning, and then I realized all I had to do was that one picture that does, you know, less is more.
It's like yeah. dinosaur comics, right?
Yes, it works fine, you know. And it's you got that. I have this application on the iPad that they were, like, giving away or something one day, and I couldn't resist. Of course, it takes all the.
Is anyone still listening? Are you... I'm just kidding. Anyway. I'm kidding. Not
no one was listening in the first place. Let's. All right. Why don't we talk about the new topic since we
Jim,
have a topic? People like topics.
It's true. We should still talk about the new topic.
So we should talk about the new topic. The new topic, which is what?
Something about animals.
Justified justice. Justice requires that you kill animals, that you don't kill animals, that animals kill you.
Recognize the right. I don't.
Justice requires the recognition
of animal rights.
Justice requires the recognition of animal rights. Okay, yep. I actually did blog this. everything that I've ever spoken in a debate class kind of thing about justice has been the conflicting claims of people of one sort or another. So bringing in a claimant who is not human makes this a very interesting problem.
Because I think what also makes it interesting is that it's exactly the fact that it's about justice and it's not about morality or something like that. I feel like that's an interesting way to construct the issue.
See, I would have made it morality, but I think you may be right that making a morality in a way almost becomes less arguable than if it's justice.
Well, it's what naturally comes when you legalize gay marriage.
That slippery slope.
Suddenly, we're letting animals get married.
That's yeah. It's the end of civilization.
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree, Jim, that it makes it easier in morality. I just think it makes it.
A better topic.
With justice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, when I was thinking about this, I said, well, how do animals get a claim for rights? I mean, especially because I can think of some animals that have, I wouldn't be all that happy to give them all that many rights. I mean, how many rights do I give to a timber rattlesnake, you know, as compared to how many rights do I give to a cow? How many rights do I give to a guide dog? I mean, am I going to give them all an equal? What I have to do is give them all some definition of rights or some allocation of rights that would apply to all of them. I'm not obviously not equally, but fairly.
We've lost Beats. I just want to put that on the record. Okay.
Oh, he did. We did lose. I mean, we lost him technically.
Right, connection, right?
Not because we were talking. Okay, let me get him back on here. Anyhow, you see what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think I'll save my comp when Beats comes back because I want him to hear what I'm saying.
I mean, I have him here. Let me put him on here.
Mike Beats is calling, but I
don't know. Now Palmer's. Palmer's. I'm here. Oh, you're there. There you go. I didn't see you in the ledge.
Okay. I don't know how to add Beats into the conversation.
I thought I just did.
He was just calling me. Everybody at home, I hope that you're enjoying
technical difficulties. Please
Skype.
Hold.
Actually, I can pause. Okay, I just turned it. I just took it off pause. We're back. Right. 3 hours later. 3 hours.
All right, we're back. Later. So what I
have
was
no
say,
idea what we were saying.
I think that this topic is kind of fascinating because I think that debaters who want to be really seriously successful on this topic need to do a more intensive reading, I think, of literature on political rights than perhaps they might otherwise be doing. I think a lot of debaters of any skill level sometimes try to cut corners when it comes to reading those kinds of texts. But I think that the interesting wording about justice as opposed to morality with animal rights, I think, makes deep reading of general literature about rights theory really important. I mean,
to me, general reading about rights is the stuff I've already read, none of which applies.
But I don't know whether I agree about that, because real rights theory will talk about what is the origin of rights or why we have rights in the first place, and mm-hmm. I think it actually totally applies, because then we have to talk about what characteristics or not make animals have rights or not, right?
Like, I mean, rationality is one reason we have ascribed, I mean, human rights, you know, as a recognition of rationality. Animals don't have rationality. So I can't use that. I mean, I just purely existing would mean that a rutabaga would have the rights. So there has to be something other than that. There's a pleasure pain calculus, but
sure.
What do you have against the rutabagas?
I mean, I personally would add rutabagas to my defense.
I think animal rights is an interesting subject to begin with, because there's so many different kinds of animals, and different animals seem to have different levels of intelligence, as we would define intelligence, or different tolerance levels for pain and things like that. And I feel like that's
more
all of that
the
place.
Line between an animal and a plant is fuzzier than people would think.
And on that level, one could argue that potentially the line between a human and an animal and certain kinds of animals is fuzzier than perhaps with other kinds of animals. And I feel like that's one of the fascinating things about this topic. It's also fascinating because Kristin Korsgaard won't go away. She'll be an author that people keep looking to on this topic, I would think.
I'm all animal research of the last whatever is pretty much demonstrating that animals are way more like us, psychologically
right.
like us, and that certain thing. Okay, we've evolved, you know, bipedal motion and things like that. But we've also evolved emotions and all this sort of stuff so that animals have, you know, some level of emotion and some level of this, that, and the other, which is actually radical. I mean, if you were to pick up a book written before 1960, you're just not going to see that.
Right.
You know, and this kind of the research that talks about this is very compelling research in favor of animals. I mean, you know, right. And
whereas the religious tradition was very hostile to that notion.
Yes, but you got to eat.
Religious tradition, most religious humans traditions. And animals are, well, yeah, that, the mm-hmm. Western.
Right, Western
yeah. religions. Yeah, Western religions, animals and humans are very, very distinct, but in biology and in evolution, they are not, so.
But, I mean, there's not an argument here, I'm just saying this, not for you, obviously, if there's actually a child listening. It's not an argument about vegetarianism or anything like that, because it's perfectly, I can make a perfectly good argument to give animals all the rights in the universe and still eat them.
The affirmative has a very low threshold. I mean, mm-hmm. to recognize the rights of something, just to, you know, to recognize, you can recognize something and completely disregard it.
Violet, that's right.
Mm-hmm. The affirmative has, I think, a very low burden of proving that we ought to recognize at least some that animals are owed something.
I don't know if that's that easy. I mean, you have to find that argument that actually proves that they are owed something. And well, making
world,
that argument.
The word recognize makes it easier, but the word requires makes it harder, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, if you accept the premise that there are many notions of justice, it seems like the affirmative can have a very self-contained case in that... they present a theory of justice that would require it, and then you just have to weigh between the two theories of justice that you're offering. Which, you know, to some degree is very different than how, you know, I would be used to, I guess our team would be used to arguing, but this resolution kind of, you know, I think sincerely allows for that, you to have this self-contained notion of justice. And the problem with that, of course, is that the counter warrants offered by the negative make for a debate that's very much not very like the clash is going to be sort of non-existent unless they choose the right area to clash, but and that's just on specific theories of justice. The interesting thing is that I don't know how many, I mean, I don't know a lot about this, who talk about animal rights and in the terms of justice so much as they do in terms of morality.
That's right.
And those sorts of things. So it'll be, it's, and I think that that's a very relevant distinction on this topic. On the other hand, you know, the topic somewhat can require almost, it would almost require that the affirmative have some sort of codification because or some sort of law or some sort of something that would show that to require the recognition of something would mean that we would, the only way that you can require a recognition is to make a law about it. Otherwise, it's not at all requiring a recognition. It's sort of an observation.
It's a nod in that direction. It's not saying in that direction.
That's why I don't know who I was talking with, but I said to some degree, the topic almost requires a plan, almost begs for it, because it says that it requires recognition. And that would mean that the affirmative would have to show why the recognition is required and why that recognition and the creation of a law is a good thing, is a just thing.
Well, they put a hell of a burden on the affirmative all of a sudden then.
Well, except yes and no. I mean, nothing would say that they have to say every single animal, but, you know, if I say that domesticated pets ought to have protection from their owners and they should therefore have the rights, like a domesticated pet ought to have rights, like, you know, you can't own a dog and beat it or a cat and beat it or whatever, right? That's
actually status quo. I mean, there are laws like that.
Right, but you would just have to argue, I guess, that law is just and that it's that that's a recognition that that the system of justice that we live in requires that we.
Why do we have those laws? I wonder why. I have no idea. Why do we have? Do we have those? We don't have those laws because of recognizing animal rights. We have those laws because we don't want people to be sons of bitches, kind of thing.
Well, I'm sure. I think that historically part of it probably had to do with property considerations, that the animals are considered the property of the person, right? I mean, I feel like that's part of the logic behind those kinds of laws. Although that wouldn't stop you from doing something to your own.
Yeah, I can do whatever I want to my property, but I can't do whatever I want to my cat. I mean, that I could, in fact, you know, that is, I would be breaking a law if I beat the cat.
The laws are different in California. One of my debaters told me this, that in fact, cats don't have the same protection as dogs do in California from protection from their owners.
But they don't need it. I know, Ram, people are, I mean, there's certain things. You always read these bizarre cases where somebody had all these animals and were, you know, yes, and it picked up for cruelty. And I mean, there's certainly in New York, I mean,
Massachusetts, if you run over and kill a dog, you must report it. But if you run over and kill a cat, you have no such duty.
What about a deer? I mean, if you hit a deer, what do you have to do?
Well, if you hit a deer, your car's going to stop working. So you're probably going to have to call.
Now, I hit a deer, and I was able to get away, and the deer was gone. You know, so it's not. I had one to call. I mean, you know,
I am not familiar with the relevant section of Massachusetts general laws. So,
but I would. I feel. I mean, having done the, having run. No, let's put it the deer ran into me. Let's be clear about this. And I'm driving along, not at a particularly fast rate of speed. It was on a back road, and hit a deer. And I'm like, holy crap. You know, and I'm like, oh, you know, you immediately stop. It's like the end of the world. And then the window and the car is all bashed up. I was able to drive. I haven't fixed it since then, so it wasn't all that much damage. But the deer is gone. And it's like, and you have, no, I'm thinking to myself, you know, he's like half dead and I should be out there and John Wayne and turn your back and shoot the horse and all this kind of stuff. And I felt really bad about this poor wounded animal, which you know, probably just died of you know, painful death and later that day. So one does have sympathy, even though it was his fault. You know, I want to point that out. You know, it was suicide.
He was driving like a madman.
I wasn't even behind the wheel, so the damn thing killed. You know, he committed. You know,
probably
did
just commit suicide. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
It jumped out in front of you, like.
Yeah. So, but one does have an emotional response to even a situation like this, which is my point. So, I mean, bro, yeah, so the emotions are maybe protecting the animals, but that's not because I think that the deer has rights. He was, like, wrong. I mean, he should not have run in front of my car. So there, in court, he'd be like, he's found guilty.
The interesting thing is, once you start recognizing the rights of animals, then does that mean that when a tiger, I always say tiger, I should say lion, because I don't actually know what tigers hunt. When a lion kills a gazelle, that lion violated the right of the gazelle?
That's right. And on that token, do we have a responsibility to minimize that, right? Like, do we have a responsibility now, like as good Samaritans, to intervene with predators in nature? I think that's also a...
But no, that wouldn't...
Doesn't the lion have a right to eat the gazelle?
I'm sorry.
Doesn't the lion have the right to eat the gazelle?
It's the circle of life. I saw that movie.
No, but these are all... extremely valid arguments, like extremely valid areas of consideration.
No, they don't have the intellect to recognize rights.
Well, then how do they have rights?
I'm just very happy I hired Ryan Davis right now. That's all I'm gonna say. God bless America.
So. I mean, is he like an animal killer? I mean, who's?
No, he has a PhD in philosophy and does work with rights and ethics. God
does he have a pet?
I actually hasn't talked about a pet yet.
Well, there you go. He has no pets. He has no sympathy for animals. And you got this guy coming up with policy for you.
Wow.
Mark my words.
Well, I mean, but you have to figure why. If it's not emotional response, if it's not emotional response that gives them rights, then it has to come. I mean, we do reckon, like, we can't just go and kill dolphins. Like, we feel like there's something there. We also feel like it's wrong, for example, to kill our pets. We feel that it's wrong to kill endangered species. We feel that it's wrong to kill, like for some reason we have this, you know, we we definitely do feel like they have a right to, like, this being, or this I guess this this particular, like, the species, we do feel like it has some right to exist.
We've been make an argument that all species have a right to exist, and it would be corollary to that they have the right to exist as that species, you know, that right. We don't and we're not going to try to make them into something else, which answers me. Yes.
Well,
John's thing about the lions, you're not going to take the lions and make them into vegetarians. They're not lions anymore, and it would kill them. I mean, they live on meat. Their bodies exist to live on meat. You know, so, I mean, we're not talking about animal rights qua other animals. You're talking about animal rights versus humans.
No, but the point that I think we're trying to make is that these kinds of notions of rights and justice, they're all contestable phrases. So I think that you would actually, it might be obvious that people think of animal rights in terms of interactions with humans, but actually I think that requires a little bit of work on the debaters to explain what animal rights are and why we're only talking about animals to humans and whatnot, because the whole discussion of rights has the potential to open up like a Pandora's box in the round. I think that's what Beats is trying to say, right?
You just take a very minimalist approach to what rights are.
I agree. Of course,
you're never going to say that animals have a right to vote, or, you know, like free speech or something like that. Because we couldn't understand what they had to say anyway.
They can talk all they want.
Like Congress, the same thing.
But we have nothing to say, and we do it twice.
So if rights are a super minimalist thing. Right, like the right not to have your species go extinct or whatever. That as a species, that, you know, they have the right to exist. Then, you know, you could argue that certainly that could be a definition of what the rights are of, like, that.
Awful. I mean, I'm thinking, but I did blog this, and one of the things I wrote about, like, medical testing. So how do I make an argument that the rights of humanity outweighs the rights of chimpanzees if we're going to kill them for medical tests to save human beings? I'm not saying we should or shouldn't do this, but how do I make the argument?
I'm not sure that life is the cornerstone of rights, though.
But that's right, exactly, and that's another thing that people can't really take for granted in terms of this debate. I mean, people can talk about suffering being, like, you know, minimization of suffering being more important than the actual the life itself, the preservation of life itself, right? And there are other things that play into rights as well.
At some point, this has to go beyond just let's have a nice ecological system where everything is balanced and it's the circle of life. It has to be, at some point, there has to be a rights conflict that I'm going to determine on the basis of X. And that rights conflict is going to be people versus the animals. And there's no, you know, intuition on my part that it has to always be the humans.
I agree.
That's right. So
at the point where it's not the humans, I need a damn good argument for the chimpanzee versus Joe Blow.
But, I mean, if you're treating, if there's some check on the human, like, we accept the premise that there is a circle of life, and we do accept that some animals, humans being those sorts of being an animal too, not that I'm saying that the debate is about humans in the sense that they're deserving of rights, but that they're part of the whole circle of life thing. Then it becomes, how are you treating that circle of life, insofar as there's like, humans still are going to eat animals just like the lion eats the gazelle, but they're still going to prey on the weak just like the lion preys on the weak one, and they take advantage of that low hanging fruit. And so the question becomes, how are they treated when they're alive? Maybe, I don't know. Like, that's the question on whether or not we do afford the animals that we are sort of come into contact with, have the ability to manipulate, have the ability, if there ought to be some check on that. When you're on the affirmative, certainly you want to say the negative would say no, there does not have to be a check. And at the point when there's a check, then there is a right. And that check is that right.
Is it a right if it's contingent?
I don't know. I mean, well, yes, of course it is. Just like the right to vote is contingent, and all rights are contingent.
Well, contingent on not identity, but circumstance, right?
Do you have
a general right not to be killed, right? But what do we do with rabid animals?
Well, I'm not sure that you don't have. I'm not sure that you have a right not to be killed. I think, for example, lots of states have the death penalty. I'm not sure it's not a I'm not sure that life is an inviolable right. And insofar as that right can be checked back by some, insofar as that right is like that, we can get rid of that right. Then it just makes it like all other rights. There is not a single right that we do not somehow waive in you, that whoever makes decisions in this world doesn't waive for some utilitarian calculus at some point. And at that point, then to grant rights to animals and then still say that yes, that they're not absolute, just like no right that a human has is absolute either. The leap to me isn't that big. It's that you do have this check, and that check is going to be your argument, like your standing up to the masses. So for the owl that lives in the tree in Washington State or in the Redwood Forest, they have some check against humans cutting down their home or whatever. And as long as we recognize that check exists, we might violate it all the time. Over and over and over and over again, and then we start questioning it. But the fact is that if we never question it, then I think you would start running into problems. It's that we would question it because of some reason, and to me that reason, it seems like that reason could be rights, whether or not it's articulated in terms of that their rights stem from the same places where human rights stand from is a separate debate. But the fact that we give it pause seems like we feel like we do owe them something. But there are lots of animals where we feel like we owe them nothing, like the rodents that run around. Like, we feel like we should be able to kill them on the spot.
But we buy humane mouse traps. Yeah,
you know, we put them in gas chambers.
Well, I don't put my mice in gas. Yeah, I have a cat. But I mean, you know,
Also the question of insects. I mean, when you have termites, they take your house, they make it airtight, and they spray gas in there.
Yep. But I'm here. It's a direct rights conflict, me versus them, and I decide that screw them.
Well, might makes right.
Yeah, and at some point, I mean, there is just going to be I'm better at it than they are. But if they were better at it than I am, they would do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, it's me versus them. Yeah, we're both fighting. It's a territorial fight. I have better tools at my command, so I'm going to win that territorial fight. But there's like no alternative. With other things, there are perhaps alternatives.
What if there was an alternative, but it cost $1,000 more?
Well, I mean, these are the issues, you know.
And if that's okay, is it really a right?
But we also feel like I think that we feel like it would be wrong for someone to just go around a college campus and start shooting squirrels. Like, we would feel like that's wrong. Like, if someone was serial killing squirrels, then we would feel like that's wrong. Like it's like they shouldn't be doing that. The squirrel's not bothering us. But the second that squirrel enters into your house, then
it's Rambo time.
And where are you going to find a squirrel serial killer when you need one? You know,
exactly. College campuses, evidently.
And also we feel like it's like I think that there are a lot of people, not Dick Cheney and his friend he shot in the face, but like there are people that feel like it's wrong to have these places that are these gated in places where there are animals to hunt. Yet they're these gated, like they feel like I think people feel a sort of there's an injustice to that if you're gonna go hunting, there ought not be that I think there's an ethics to hunting that people have. That's so there's something that makes us feel like even though we have this like we're so advantaged intellectually that we can create these tools and these situations to manipulate the environment so much so that we could that we would win every single time, that there's an issue of fair play involved, and fair play has to come from something. And that fair play can't just, I mean, it comes from, to, like I said before, to me it seems like that's where the rights begin, where we start feeling issues of fair play with this competition that we might be having with animals and this predator-prey relationship. And I think that's why, for example, we don't feel like it's unjust when the lion eats the gazelle, because they're in the open range. The lion doesn't have a gun. The lion doesn't have any, you know, any sort of...
It's a killing machine. You know, it has a great advantage over a gazelle. You know, the gazelle really is a little fast. That's the it.
Most consent in failure, actually.
Yes. And like a lion can go days without catching one. The gazelle wins most of the time.
It only has to lose the once. What you're saying, though, actually, I absolutely agree. I mean, it makes sense to relate. I mean, conceptually, I'm relating as you're talking. I mean, you started talking about the spotted owl in the forest, and I can relate that, or I think an argument has to relate that to you're only allowed three trout. And you're only allowed to catch them once a month, and you're culling herd. You know, you're allowed to shoot deer because there's too many deer. You know, when there's not a lot of deer, you're not allowed to shoot them. That kind of thing. These all stem, I think, from the same.
Well, and one of the rationales is to make the rest of the deer healthier, because otherwise they starve. Yeah.
So you're doing this for the sake of the environment. I don't know if you're doing it because you believe the animals have rights, but I think the clearest example is the spotted owl. At which point you're saying, okay, does that? Because there's really not a lot of else going on there except that it would have the right to live. You know, if I'm only picking the three trout, well, that means there'll be trout next year, you know, so I can get more trout. You know, I eat better. You know, whereas with the spotted owl, that's a very pure, clean example of giving a benefit to an animal for reasons that are hard to define. Very hard to define.
I think that the spotted owl example is, like, you can still make the sort of environmental argument, too, with that. Like, the negative could come back and say, like, it doesn't require us to recognize the rights of them so much as there's good reasons why we don't do this. And that is, we need to make sure that we have species diversity, that we need to, you know, all those sort of utilitarian reasons for having protections. You know, from a conservationist perspective, don't have to be rooted in any sort of right. What is rooted in rights, though, is this is the idea of the squirrels and this why I was looking out my window and I just saw someone shooting squirrels, like I would probably feel some outrage about that, because just the human in me probably would, because it just seems wrong for some reason.
Cruelty to animals seems wrong. I mean, yes, just random cruelty does.
Yes, and it's
Did you grow up in a city, Mr. Beats? because guess what? That happens all the time.
People shooting squirrels in the city?
Not in the city.
No, in the country. People eat squirrels.
I know. I grew up, people's going out, you see somebody outside shooting squirrels, and you're like, oh, hi, Bob, how you doing?
them squirrels is good eating. Yeah, depending where you come from.
Okay, so let's say that let's use a different example. Something we don't eat. I don't know. Like,
we eat everything.
They weren't shooting squirrels to eat them. I mean, folks use squirrels and stuff for target practice all the time.
Where did you come from again?
You know, when Jeff Roberts from Alabama
rural tells
Atlanta.
That's the case. Yeah. Any rural areas like that. There's a much more cavalier attitude.
Agreed. Anywhere where there aren't street lamps, the world is different.
I mean there are plenty of places around where I grew up and a lot of places that are rural that you know, people take pot shots at animals all the time just to hear them squeal. It's the way it is, and there's no particular action taken to ensure that does not happen. It's not viewed as a dysfunctional thing.
Okay, well then maybe I'm wrong.
I was raised to understand that where I was brought up that squirrels were protected, that you weren't allowed to shoot them.
Okay, but let's say that you were to catch a squirrel and then torture it. That would be a little messed up, right?
Yeah.
Even where you're from.
That like wouldn't be accepted.
Like, if you like picked its limbs off and or something along those lines.
It's
so there is a check somewhere. Hello.
The crickets are, I mean, they were just imagining this poor squirrel having its limbs picked off, limb by limb.
But again, would that have consequences other than just people saying, ugh, why'd you do that?
Well, I think lots of psychologists would say that that person's on the fast track to becoming a serial killer.
Yeah, this, we know that this is a definitely a step in serial killing.
But it's deviant behavior that, that we definitely
It's indicative of mental of serious mental illness to torture animals.
Yeah, but it's indicative of it, but it does not carry...
It
doesn't
isn't
carry
it.
Consequences in and of itself, right? Mm-hmm. It's a sign pointing towards a bad thing, but it's not a bad thing.
But we I don't know. I sort of think it's a bad thing,
too. Well, it's kind of a bad thing. I mean,
It's... But again, our society doesn't recognize it as a violation of a right because there's no consequence.
Right.
I could go
it's
out
not
and kill
a
all the squirrels I want to right now, and as long as I didn't miss and hit a person, no one's going to do anything to me, right? And they may think that maybe someday I'll flip my lid and become a serial killer. But I haven't done anything yet, right? It's just a sign. I mean, if you were to arrest people because of signs they could be a criminal someday, then, you know, that opens the door to racial discrimination. That opens the door to discrimination based on class. So, you know, not every sign is a...
There's only one race that is guilty of having a lot of serial killers.
That's true.
Well, I'm not talking about serial specifically.
Well, arrest all the white people now, because you know, they're the ones.
Mm-hmm. Whitey needs to go out to jail.
Right? It's the Minority Report. I mean, yeah, but you know, you gotta people have to do something. But I mean, it's, there's different issues here. But and you're right, though, it's not the rights of the animals that we're responding to in those situations, or the.
It might be though, like that, like our that feeling we feel might not be articulated properly as rights. But it could be, like, the same reason why someone I have no connection to, you know, you feel bad for them if they are shot or something like that, and I don't know who they are. I don't know if, you know, I guess I don't know. And there's something. The threshold might be a lot higher for a human, but. Or I should say lower, maybe, but just, you know, at what capacity does something have rights? Does it have to be something intellectual? I don't know. And you don't, yeah, I don't know. It seems like the right to exist in areas. I think that we move somewhat. We're moving more and more that way. That like we ought to leave animals alone, sort of, and we cordon off certain areas that they can exist. And I think that it's not just out of a utilitarian belief in the animal, but instead, or for like the environment, but instead also because we just sort of feel like they have, even if you don't say the word right to be there. I mean, the short answer is they have a right to be there.
I think that the only thing I want to add here is that I just think that debaters need to be thinking a lot about what rights are and what that means in terms of justice specifically. I don't mean to backtrack, but I feel like all of these discussions that we're having still go back to why do we think that things have rights in the first place? And that's a vital thing for debaters to be exploring at this point. And I think that debaters shouldn't just assume that they already know what animal rights are and dig in. And I also don't think that they should just look up animal rights and only read articles that are about animal rights, because it's vital that people be familiar with rights theory in general for this topic to make sense.
Right. Well, I think you can't just – I think that a debater that just stands up and reads evidence from PETA – that says animals have rights is going to run into problems from a standpoint like I think John's right, without questioning, like without getting to the standards of what creates rights, then there are definitely political motivations for people to advance animal rights. I mean, people make a living advancing animal rights and those sorts of things. So it seems like you have sort of some sort of weighing advantage if you pick some theory of justice that isn't based on animal rights but is instead based on rights, and then show how animals maybe fit into that,
right.
Or would meet that definition.
I'm looking at. I just put in animal rights into Google. PETA does come up first.
Sure.
So, and then there's all these pictures of poor little bunnies. Yeah.
Yeah, they never pick the ugly ones.
And they don't have, you know, there's no dead timber rattlesnake here. And there's no, at least on the first page, nobody here saying, screw the animal rights, you know.
Which makes you wonder how much of this is an emotional appeal and how much of it is an intellectual appeal. And that's the part of the topic that I have trouble wrestling with is ickiness enough to say that there's a right there or not, you know?
I don't know why it shouldn't be. It seems like...
There's a whole school of thought that disgust is the first measure of morality, you know, and what disgusts us, you know, is what we find immoral. So,
other way around, though.
And the closer, what doesn't disgust, the less it disgusts. What's the opposite of disgust? We find moral. And that's absolutely, there's documentation on that. But
the thing is that you can't say the causality there. You can't say if you find it disgusting because it's immoral or because it, you know, it's immoral because we find it disgusting. Because otherwise, I mean, explain gay rights.
What?
People have been finding gays icky and disgusting for years and years, and yet they're right.
Well, it depends on the gay person.
The Greeks definitely did not find that icky and disgusting.
That wasn't
I know icky people. I mean, gay, straight.
It didn't depend
on
the gay people in 1950, though. That's the point. Or 1920. Right? Like, then it was reflexively, oh, no, that's wrong. And now that's no longer true. So is that reflexive, oh, that's wrong, it makes me uncomfortable, enough to say that there's a right or a lack of a right there?
Maybe, and it just takes, you know, and that's why, I mean, that might be, like, the exploration of what emotion has, like, how emotion plays into how we make arguments and how we think about things is, I don't feel like I have enough knowledge on this to give a any sort of opinion on it, but it certainly is an interesting, like the things that then why I mean, things that do I guess question the limits of our acceptability and the emotional response we have to those. Because without that emotional response, then we can start logically justifying doing really awful things if we base it purely on intellect.
Up utilitarian, yeah.
Right, and everything becomes cold, and everything becomes calculated, and going the other way is equally bad. So yes, it's true that a lot of rights people have been denied based on ideas of emotion and ignorance and those sorts of things. But to take emotion out of the picture entirely also seems wrong. And so emotion has to play into our decision making to some degree. Otherwise, everything does become cold and calculated. And I'm not positive that that's how we want. That's not how justice would require that. That justice might require some appeal to emotion. I mean, and that's you know, there's a lot of even just from like how like that's why we have testimony and stuff like that, because emotion does play a role in how we view facts it makes sense that we would have emotion into it to some degree. So yes. Just because we're disgusted by something doesn't mean that it ought not have the right to it, but it also might mean that disgust, that revulsion, is an important aspect that we ought not disregard.
I don't disagree.
Okay, are we done?
I think so. I think we've pretty much beaten these animals into the ground.
We have nothing left to say about the topic, and it's only week one.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just look, right now, I'm going to make a specific suggestion to our listeners. I'm having the Bronx Science kids do very specific – I mean, we have a big squad, so this is a little bit more feasible with a large group of people. But I think even with a small group of people, this kind of assignment is good. I'm having each kid basically research a very specific thing. And before we start cutting cards – or putting together specific cases for people to run, they're going to do little sort of oral presentations to each, to everybody else on the team together as a way of sort of getting everyone up to speed on different nuances of the topic. Because I think straightforward topic analyses have the drawback of sort of, well, first off, the coach does the topic analysis. The coach is just going to pick the areas and probably talk on a tangent about things that interest the coach the most. Whereas empowering the kids on the team to do the research brings different perspectives to the topic. And I feel like the animal rights stuff, there's so many different aspects. I mean, what about zoos? What about circuses? Like, there are just lots of different things that are you know, cloning, genetic engineering, organ harvesting, stuff like that. There's so many areas on this topic that are fascinating, actually. And I feel like first thinking about the topic that way, not obsessing over what card to run for the argument you think you already know, but really familiarizing yourself with what a broad topic this is, I think is the right way to go. Especially if Beats's point from earlier is correct, that a lot of AFs will feel that the term require means that they want to run plans, it's all the more reason to really do deep research on this topic.
Oh, I think that people are definitely going to be running plans. I mean, I think even at camp, people are talking about dolphins and stuff like that, and how dolphins
the cute animals.
Yes, exactly. The easy ones, the low-hanging fruits.
The low-hanging
right.
Cows,
well, it gets really hard to talk about rights in the context of an amoeba. You know, I mean, there's at the other end of the scale, it's
sure
difficult. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, the issues become the heart, like, it, the debates about the harder issues, not the easy. I guess the easy ones, like on whatever side you're on. I guess it's. Anyway, I'm done.
All right. Go. Good night.
Yeah.
I'm going to Las Vegas in the morning.
Going to Las Vegas. I'm not used to doing this yet, so I guess we're done.
Yep, we are.
Yes. Okay. I think we're done, and we may or may not do one next week. We may not have anything to talk about.
I'm not around next week.
Very well then.
Okay. So I will say good night. Good night.
Oh, we just lost our remaining listeners.
Boy, that was the worst ending we've ever done.
And we've done some stinkers. Okay. I haven't ended it yet. Where's the damn button? There it is.
The beginning wasn't so hot either, so.